In my 40-year history of broadcasting, I have never endorsed a weight loss product because most don't deliver until now. Science behind CaloCurb is so compelling that I can support it as a plausible alternative for curbing appetite and enhancing satiety to help you shed pounds. The active ingredient in CaloCurb, Amerisate, comes from a specific New Zealand-grown hops flower, which works by activating your body's own appetite-regulating chemical messengers, including GLP-1, which signals specific areas of the brain to effectively manage hunger in just 1 hour. CaloCurb is clinically proven to reduce hunger by 30%, cravings by 40%, and calorie intake by an average of 18%. CaloCurb is a safe, effective, and affordable natural appetite-suppressing supplement made in the United States with no chemicals, synthetics, or caffeine, and it doesn't cause jitters. Take control of your eating habits and cravings naturally with CaloCurb. For more information and order, just go to CaloCurb.com. That's CaloCurb.com. Use coupon code DH10 for 10% off. That's CaloCurb.com. Coupon code DH10 for CaloCurb. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's an opportunity to address your questions because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And that's a forum where you can share comments or experiences, as long as it is in the realm of intelligent medicine, and also pose questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net, logically enough. So how are you doing, Layla?
Oh, it's kind of warm, but I don't mind. How are you?
Yeah, it's we're really in the sort of the hot summer doldrums here. I got up like super early this morning and I took a bike ride by the beach. But, even though I got back before, 9 o'clock, it's getting pretty hot. It's pretty hot. So
it was right. Yeah.
It's yeah, at least you're moving mm-hmm. and, you know, so you generate your own breeze when you're on a bike.
Okay.
This was a pretty eventful weekend. I watched in real time as the president of the United States was nearly assassinated. This is the third time in my life that I've seen an attempt on a president. Of course, I was 10 years old or 11 years old during the assassination of President Kennedy. Subsequently, I was in high school when Robert Kennedy was assassinated. There was the assassination of Martin Luther King the same year. And then there was, I remember working as a medical resident when Reagan was shot. I have to say that I was so busy that I saw it on the TV and I just glanced at it and said, oh my God, the president's been shot. And I gave it about 10 seconds. And then I just had to hurry off to my duties. And I just, you know.
I remember that day too.
Yeah.
And I remember his funny comment, Nancy, I forgot to duck.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, he certainly
showed something like that.
He showed some sang-froid, and so indeed did President, you know, former President Trump. And, you know, regardless, you know, what your opinion is of President Trump and his merits or demerits, you know, it just kind of underlies that this is a violent country. You know, we've had more presidential assassinations, attempted assassinations, and of course, there's, you know, lots of, you know, literally massacres in this country. And, you know, so what it, you know, every week I have to come up with an original idea for a newsletter article. I know you're also tasked with that. So sometimes, you know, I think like, my goodness, I've written about everything under the sun.
And what else am I going to write?
Yeah. So this morning while I was on my bike, I thought, you know, because there's not a lot of stimulus other than, you know, looking at the road. I thought, you know, maybe I should write about some of the theories that underpin a dietary relationship to violence, aggression, and criminality. And there's actually quite a lot of literature about that. There's also literature on relationship between lead toxicity and criminality. And of course, there's a pretty robust literature about the relationship between antidepressants and violent behavior.
Yes.
And, you know, the reason
for that— School shootings and things, and suicide.
Indeed. And the reason for that is, you know, if you put
you know, if, and I've never been, you know, full disclosure, I've never been in the military. I'm not, you know, never been, thank you for your service. I've never raised my hand in violence, you know, especially with a weapon, to anyone. So it takes a certain amount of, shall we say, detachment to attempt to take the life of another human being. And, you know, I think that if I had someone in my sights, I would have a lot of trepidation and hesitation about doing that. Mm-hmm. However, the way that antidepressant medications work is they kind of reduce the emotional tone. And that is helpful for relieving you of anguish and depression.
Yeah.
But it may also turn you into a stone cold, uncompassionate killer. And that is a concern. So in the upcoming
that
article—
That very flat emotionality, yeah. Yeah. It's a kind of indifference. But, you know, it can be very palpable. It can be very, wow, what's kind of very cool or very chill, but chilly, not chill, like chill out.
Yeah.
But what's so chilly about that person?
Yeah.
That you may be observing, for example.
This is like an emotional flattening that can occur, which again is, you know, can preserve you from, you know, extreme low mood, you know, and take the edge off depression. But on the other hand, it may also somewhat disinhibit you from violent or aggressive behavior. And I've begun to do some research for this article, and there's actually quite a lot of literature that suggests that there is a relationship. So, okay, you know, we'll look at diet, you know, frankly, you know, I do a little, you know, when I'm in New York, and New York, as you know, is kind of like, it's kind of like a freak show, you know, here on the subway. And, you know, you see people.
I'm reminded on the subway when I.
And you see people behaving in the oddest ways sometimes, mm-hmm. and sometimes in a threatening way. But the first thing, because I'm a medical nutritionist, the first thing that goes to my head is like, I wonder what their level of brain omega-3 fatty acids is, you know, because I might, you know, I see them, maybe they're eating a bag of Cheetos or something, you know, and I'm thinking maybe their brain is just starved for nutrients. And so anyway, so I don't want to hitch my hobby horse to this terrible event because everybody's got an agenda. You know, some people say, well, oh, it's a CIA conspiracy and, you know, we'll have to see. I mean, I'm keeping an open mind, but I'm not jumping to conclusions. Other people are saying that it was staged by, you know, the Republicans to make Trump heroic. Yeah, that's a little far-fetched, I'm thinking. And other people
that
are saying—
That really is. Come on, a bullet.
And other people are saying, you see, it's the guns. If we just got rid of the guns. But then, you know, what you see in other countries, unfortunately, is in China, there's like an enormous number of savage knife attacks. You know, they've confiscated all the guns, but the violent people, they find a way somehow.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know,
not to mention pressure cookers, not to mention automobiles and trucks that can run into anything anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
pressure cooker bombs.
Yeah.
So anyway, so, look, I'm going
to— It was a terrible day.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we can all acknowledge that, look, and the worst case scenario, and, you know, some people might feel like, oh, you know, a tyrant was eliminated. But what a horror show for America if Trump had been assassinated.
Oh my God.
Because, you know, regardless of where you are in the political spectrum, what a message to the world. What disarray would that have caused in our country? How would it have increased the temperatures and, you know, led to chaos and potential violence had the assassin been successful? So I think we can, you know, I think any rational person should breathe a sigh of relief that we had an outcome that was, you know, nearly tragic, but, you know, averted the worst case scenario. Anyway, that's my opinion, and, you know, some may share it, some may disagree, but I am going to take a nutritional perspective on violent behavior And, you know, look, it's almost, I find it uncanny, is that it is almost never disclosed when you see these school shooters, you know, and they're often killed. You know, they're killed because, and do we do an autopsy? Do we look at their blood levels of certain things, whether, and do we look at their medical records?
Medications.
I don't know. Is there a cover up or what's going on that we don't know
more? That's my question.
That we don't know more. I think we need to really do some deep introspection about that in this country.
Agree.
So anyway, off the soapbox, into questions, questions@drhoffman.net. Before we get to questions, I want to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message. So here goes, listen up.
As you know, I'm a big proponent of CBD to tonify the endocannabinoid system, which regulates many of our most critical bodily functions, such as learning and memory, emotional processing, sleep, temperature and pain control, and inflammatory and immune responses. CBD is a real breakthrough in herbal products. But you may not know that CBD can deliver the same healthful results for your pets. The CBD brand that I take personally and recommend to my patients is PlusCBD from CV Sciences, which is now proud to introduce premier CBD chews tailored for dogs. PlusCBD pet wellness treats are crafted with the utmost care and supported by extensive research validated by a landmark safety study backed by the National Animal Supplement Council. There are two varieties, PlusCBD pet hip and joint health chews and PlusCBD pet calming care chews. To learn more and to order, visit pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman30 for 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for PlusCBD's pet wellness blends.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They are what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And by the way, I posted on Facebook a really nice review. If you go to Apple. And by the way, just to want to remind people, some people say, well, I don't have patience to listen to these things. I'd like to read. Okay. If you like to read, go to the Apple podcast app and look for Intelligent Medicine or look under my name, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it'll take you to the app. And you'll actually, when you click on one of the podcasts, you can listen to it. You can subscribe and then they'll, you know, automatically put that into your podcast feed. As I subscribe to several podcasts other than myself, but you'll also get a transcript, which is super cool.
It is. You can read that.
Yep.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good technology.
But we did get a very nice review that I posted. And, you know, I from time to time, I check the reviews. And by and large, they're, you know, resoundingly appreciative of the work that we do. So thanks to you folks.
Instead of treacherous, as we were talking about a moment ago.
Yeah. So, and you know, if you care to, please post a review, because that takes us up in the algorithm of, podcasts, and more people may be prompted to investigate and test drive the Intelligent Medicine podcast on various apps, including, Apple. And, you know, we're on Stitcher. We're on, you know, a lot of the different podcasts, places. Okay.
Right.
So let's get to questions.
We've got a question here from Chris. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Can you comment on the supplement Spike Support?
Mm-hmm.
They are reporting that it's effective against 19, but I'm not sure. But the main ingredients are nattokinase and dandelion root.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking at the actual product. Yeah, there's nattokinase, dandelion, there's selenium.
Mm-hmm.
There's black sativa extract. There's green tea extract.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Irish sea moss.
Yeah. So, okay. Look, I mean, I think, frankly, that this is kind of exploitive. So what's it about? You know, people say, what do you mean? What does that name mean? What's that name again? Spike?
Spike support.
Spike support. So what we're talking about.
Yeah. Against COVID-19, I guess the spike protein.
We're talking about the spike protein. So. There are two concerns here. One is that in long COVID, there may be residual spike protein and spike, you know, like something that is immunogenic. And the spike protein is a little bit like it sounds. It's actually what permits the virus from docking and penetrating cells. So that's the spike. And, you know, from a microscopic standpoint, it looks a little like a spike. And so the innovative vaccinologist came up with the idea that if we just inject the spike protein, we can create an immune response to the spike. And there, that's the rationale for the mRNA vaccine. We're actually giving instructions for making spike protein. So the body makes spike protein. And then when the body makes spike protein, the immune system then mounts a reaction to the spike protein. So there are people who advance the theory that the reason for long COVID, but also the reason for vaccine reactions, is that the spike protein persists. Mm. And there is some controversy about that. Some people claim like, no, the spike protein is very transient. It is degraded very quickly. Other people say that the spike protein, it's almost like you're creating a spike protein factory with instructions to make spike protein.
That was the original idea, wasn't it? That's right. What everybody was
talking about. Defenders of the vaccine say that that mRNA degrades very quickly, so the instruction is transient, and it's not like, you know, perpetually you're going to be making spike protein. Nonetheless, the idea persists, and I don't think you can, we really know enough to disprove that. So first of all, you have to accept the idea that the spike protein is the culprit in long COVID and in vaccine reactions. So that already is a controversial premise. Take it one logical leap further. Let's say that it is the spike protein, and you got all the spike protein floating around. So how are you going to break it down? And nattokinase is a proteolytic enzyme that breaks things down. It was originally developed as a clot buster because we actually use clot busters in stroke. People get injections of that in order to break the clot. So they have this kind of clot buster therapy, but this is medical clot busters, not like something you buy in a health food store. Nattokinase has a little bit that property. Nattokinase is popular in Japan. And I have to say that one of my first television interviews, I must have been like 30 or something, and just starting practice, a Japanese film crew came to the United States to interview U.S. doctors about the benefits of nattokinase for cardiovascular prevention, because it is a bit of a platelet inhibitor and a clot buster. So it was, you know, so I knew about the literature. I said my piece, they filmed me. They say I was interviewed by a woman who was the equivalent of Barbara Walters, but only in Japan, only in Japan. Mm-hmm. But, and she was about 4'8", you know, so. it makes a big splash when an American doctor appears on Japanese TV, because, you know, they have enough Japanese doctors who say nattokinase is great. And nattokinase is actually from natto, which is a food. It's a fermented food. It's an acquired taste. It's kind of, you know, funky tasting, but it's part of like a Japanese diet. And there are all kinds of health benefits associated with it. Does it degrade the spike protein? The evidence I see is not terribly strong. Anecdotally, there are people who say, I had a vaccine reaction and I took nattokinase, or I have long COVID and I took nattokinase and it was great. But that's not enough, because, you know, it could have been just that their condition resolved with time anyway. So it's not, I don't think that's authoritative. There's one study out of Japan that says that nattokinase can degrade the spike protein. The problem is that I don't see it replicated outside of Japan. And frankly, the Japanese have kind of national pride and, you know, maybe an economic motive to say that nattokinase is a great thing. You know, like, just like the French might say, oh, you know, red wine is, you know, Pinot Noir is like really good for you, or, Italian or Greek researchers might say olive oil is like phenomenal. Well, it happens to be phenomenal. We know it. There's a lot more evidence behind those things. I don't know. I think it's a little bit bold to call a product Spike Protect, or what was the
Spike
name?
Support.
Spike Support. Spike.
Talk about an attention grabber, though. Spike Support.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a little bit borderline in terms of what's called Boucher Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, because it is on the verge of a medical claim. Like it's going to cure you of long COVID, or it's going to cure you of a vaccine reaction, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm not big on that. And I just don't understand the other ingredients. They're kind of gratuitous. I'm not sure why they're in there, you know, like Irish moss or something.
Yeah. You know, may help rebuild damaged tissue and muscle is the claim for the Irish sea moss.
Well, great. I'll take some of that after every bike ride. Or every time
I'm in the,
after every weightlifting routine, because the Irish sea moss is going to repair my damaged muscles.
And black sativa extract may facilitate cellular repair.
Well, that's an interesting supplement, but I don't know if it applies here. I think there's some benefits too. It's called Nigella sativa, black, what's black cumin?
Black cumin seed oil.
Yeah. And I think
Nigella sativa.
Yeah, I just don't know where to put that in my armamentarium. I think there's promise there, you know, and there's some helpful properties to that. But again, is it, you know, going to degrade the spike protein and kind of, you know, digest it away? I don't know. Show me a little more evidence that there's something going on here.
Exactly. Chris, thank you for sending this to us. All right. Okay. Oh, we've got a great note here from Bob.
Mm-hmm.
That being 72 is not over the hill. And here's why. Bob says, I just wanted you to know that this past Sunday, I set a new personal best. By the way, this came in like the previous Sunday, a week ago.
Yeah.
I just wanted you to know that this past Sunday, I set a new personal best for push-ups within a 3-minute period.
Wow.
155. And at age 72 plus at that, it's never too late.
I'm extremely demoralized by that because every time I do a set of push-ups, I'm going to be thinking about Bob. And
yes,
Bob is a year older than me. And Bob is like, he's killing me here.
Yeah. you can work towards this goal yourself, Dr. Hopkin. Oh my gosh. Yeah. We all want to be like Bob. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
But, you know, there's just a general comment about that is that there are some extraordinarily high performing people in their 70s and 80s, you know, competing in triathlons. I mean, I just saw a post from a 71-year-old Ironman triathlete. And to give you an idea what that entails, that is it's a 110-mile bike ride. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2.5-mile swim. It is a, then followed by, the top it off with dessert, which is to run a marathon, 26 miles.
Oh my God.
And so now the true champions do it in, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours. But this guy, there's a cutoff.
That's amazing.
There's a cutoff. There's a point where, you know, it's getting dark. Everybody wants to go home and, you know, you got a few stragglers. And they actually have a cutoff of 12 hours. This guy got in under the cutoff of 12 hours. Now, one has to acknowledge that this guy, if he was, you know, 40 years younger, he might have had a very, very respectable time. Mm-hmm. But let's face it, athletic performance declines as you age. And you can perform at a very high level, but you kind of have to bow to the inevitability that, you know, your performance is going to decline a little bit. You're going to be a little slower. You're going to be less strong, but you can forestall that decline. And you also have to be more careful of injuries because that level of training, you know, to sustain that level of endurance, you have to train very hard. And that's why a lot of people are sidelined is that it's the knees, it's the back, it's the shoulders.
Repetitive motion in the injuries and everything. Yeah.
And old collagen, frankly, is not as supple and is more brittle than young collagen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like being athletic, but I, You know, I can't claim the mantle of someone at the highest level of performance, and deliberately so, because I think there is potentially a destructive element to that. So
yeah,
you got to kind of know when to hold and know when to fold.
Yeah.
And I commend people for really pushing the limits, but please, you know, don't hurt yourself.
Right. Right. But Bob is great.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
defense of Bob.
Love it. Love it. Thanks, Bob.
Wonderful.
And, you know, keep it up,
yes.
You know, because that's, you know, going to be really a hedge against all manner of health mm-hmm. problems. And it's not just about your body. It's about your brain. The brain benefits of exercise are extraordinary.
Yes.
So
BDNF.
Yep. Brain-derived yeah. neurotrophic factor. Miracle grow mm-hmm. for your brain.
It is. It's miracle grow for the brain.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so,
exercise is great.
And so far, you know, mm-hmm. Black Cumin and, you know, Irish Moss, they don't do what exercise can do.
No. No, no. There isn't a pill to do what exercise can do. Yeah. One medication may come close, metformin, because both exercise and metformin make cells more sensitive to insulin. Mm-hmm. But trust me, you'd rather be exercising.
Yep.
There are no side effects to exercise.
I mean, we're looking, I mean, by the way, and yeah. we're looking at a lot of substances. We're looking at, there's some interesting information about astaxanthin as an anti-aging mm-hmm. thing. According to some studies in mice, it can extend life. There's some studies looking at rapamycin. Metformin didn't pan out in mice, but mice aren't people. Near Barzilay at Einstein is conducting a big study looking at metformin as a potential anti-aging compound. His son also is involved in anti-aging research. And it's, you know, it's just an exciting field.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We've got a question here from Marianne. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Happy, healthy summer to you both. I noticed that the protein bars that I use have a statement added to the wrapper that says, quote, contains a bioengineered food ingredient. I've been using these protein bars for decades. I'm not relying on them on a daily basis, but I keep it around as an emergency food or when I don't have time to eat. And when I reached out to the company, they said, it's important to point out that a bioengineered food disclosure symbol is a marketing label and does not convey any information about the health, safety, or environmental attributes of bioengineered food as compared to non-bioengineered counterpart.
Right. They would like you to believe that.
Yeah.
Because
they would like you to believe. But then they boast, this has a shelf life of up to a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which so, I don't want my food to have a shelf life that long.
So you know, what this is, there's actually, I think this is the result of kind of a legislative or an administrative compromise, is people want to know whether there are GMOs in their food, and that stands for genetically modified organisms. Okay?
Yeah.
And what are the downsides of GMOs? Well, you know, a couple. One is that they are novel proteins that, you know, the body may not cope well with. But that's hypothetical. You know, that's, you know, but it's kind of like, hey, I believe in Mother Nature, and if Mother Nature did not make this, you know, maybe that's a problem. Other people will counter, you know, we've been breeding plants from, you know, for millennia. We've cultivated plants, and like tomatoes are nothing like their predecessors. Potatoes are nothing like their predecessors. Corn is nothing like its predecessors. And through modern agriculture techniques, we've changed them. And they're okay. But GMO takes it to a different level where we're really altering fundamentally the composition of the food. Okay. So that's on, you know, and you could argue pro and con on that. But what the problem with many GMO products is that they're highly sprayed with things like glyphosate, because like they're Roundup ready. So like
they're Roundup like corn.
Yeah.
You know, they could spray it with more glyphosate because they know it's not going to kill it because it's genetically modified to withstand that.
Exactly.
So you're getting more glyphosate.
Yes. Yes. So, okay. So people already, GMO is a bad brand. You're right. Yes. It's like they have a branding problem. And the advocates of organic say, you should label something that's GMO. And they said, well, you know, let's not call it GMO. Let's call it something, use some weasel words, like, what's the word?
Bioengineered?
Bioengineered. Is that the word that, what's that?
Yeah.
The word?
Well, on the wrapper.
What's the disclosure?
No, it just says on the wrapper that it contains a bioengineered food ingredient.
Okay, so basically that is genetically modified.
Yeah.
But it is for... It's a weasel word for genetically modified. There's no other way around it. So, but that's because the food industry wants to kind of downplay the potential branding stigma that GMOs have. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's bioengineered. Sounds scary.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of high tech. But basically, it is GMO. So is it highly toxic to consume one energy bar occasionally that's bioengineered? I got to tell you that you got to live. And
yeah, you got to live and you could do anything you want from time to time.
And you can minimize your exposure. I think it's the cumulative exposure. And there's some circumstances where, you know, you can't avoid, like somebody invites you to like a barbecue and they give you an ear of corn, you go, excuse me, is this GMO corn? Oh, I can't have that. You know, it's like, enjoy it. But, you know, when you select your own food, maybe you want to get organic.
Exactly.
If you can find it. Now, one argument against organic is that it used to be, you know, you go to the health food store and you'd see like this, like lint carrots, and they were the organic ones. You go to the supermarket, you see the bright orange carrots that were like really fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Because the supply chain for organic was terrible.
Yes.
The supply chain for organic is a lot better now.
It is a lot better.
And
it is. Yeah. Yeah. But there is one thing that I warn people of. If they go to the produce market and they say you want to buy some broccoli today, and they go over to the organic broccoli and it looks kind of medium green and yellow around the edges and a little sad and tired, I will say, don't buy broccoli that day. Or if you really want broccoli, and if they've got good conventional broccoli that's got like a dark green and a blue hue,
yeah,
those are those sulforaphanes we're talking about. You want that.
Layla, that's precisely what I do.
Yeah.
I always look for organic.
Absolutely.
But occasionally you see that kind of contrast and you go,
exactly.
Hey, right?
I'm not getting
you also
that.
Want to look at the EW, environmental work.
EWG, number. Yes.
Yeah, the Dirty Dozen and the...
And the Clean 15.
Right.
That's because, from Environmental Working Group.
Because
EWG.org. Yeah.
They'll tell you what foods are, you know, least contaminated.
Yeah. They're very good about doing that.
So for example, for berries, I insist berries are highly sprayed.
Yes.
And I always get organic. And sometimes the price point is pretty substantial, but I just don't want the toxins that are in the berries.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And potatoes are sprayed with a whole lot of glyphosate. And, you know, many farmers, and this has been going on for a few decades, they will use it as a desiccant.
Yeah.
Because the glyphosate is helping to dry it out and helping with the harvest.
Right. It's not even about the weed killing. It's about... They use it to prevent, potentially mold growth and things
right.
like that. Yeah. Okay. Good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. Layla, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
Benjamin asks, is there a natural approach to aortic valve stenosis?
Okay. Great question. Questions at drhoffman.net. Is the destination for questions. And we'll continue with more questions in part two of today's Q&A with Layla podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.